Continuing our studies in the book of Philippians, I'm going to begin with a reading from chapter 1, verses 12 through 20, if you'd like to turn there. And read with me Philippians chapter 1, verses 12 through 20. But I want you to know, brethren, that the things which happened to me have actually turned out for the furtherance of the gospel, so that it has become evident to the whole palace guard and to all the rest that my chains are in Christ. And most of the brethren in the Lord, having become confident by my chains, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Some indeed preach Christ even from envy and strife, and some also from goodwill. The former preach Christ from selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing to add affliction to my chains, but the latter out of love, knowing that I am appointed for the defense of the gospel. What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is preached, and in this I rejoice, yes, and will rejoice. For I know that this will turn out for my deliverance through your prayer and the supply of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, according to my earnest expectation and hope that in nothing I shall be ashamed, but that with all boldness as always, so now also Christ will be magnified in my body, whether by life or by death. Can you imagine what the reaction was in the Philippian church when they heard Paul was in jail? I mean, what would have been our reaction? A man who had started the church, who had taught us, who had baptized many of us, upon whom we looked to for guidance and for advice and counsel, a man we depended on, a man who more than any other man in the Mediterranean world had influenced the spread of Christianity, and now we hear that he is in jail. That probably would have been devastating news that might have shaken even our faith, that God would have allowed such to happen. I mean, what the devil was doing back then is what we today call lawfare. One of the ways by which the devil tried to stop the kingdom of God was by locking up the preachers. Paul was in jail for one reason only. He had become a Christian. He had not committed any crime. He had not committed any civil offense. He became a Christian, and what was worse, as far as the world was concerned, he lived like he was a Christian. He acted like a Christian. The devil doesn't care if we're baptized. He doesn't care that we call ourselves Christian, just so long as we continue to act like we're in the world. But that wasn't Paul. There was a change in him, and everywhere he went, people saw the change, and they didn't like the change, and so they decided to lock him up. But the devil just never seems to understand that when he resorts to lawfare and tries to use the power of government against the people of God, it is not going to turn out well for him. In Acts chapter 8, Paul himself was involved in this. The persecution that he was engaged in, and arresting Christians, having them put in jail, giving his vote against them when it came up whether they should live or be executed. Because of that, Acts 8 verse 4 says that the church was scattered and believers went everywhere and the gospel increased. They that were persecuted were scattered everywhere preaching the word. And Paul wants the Philippians to know that that's exactly what's going on here. And so look at verse 12. He says, here's what's happened. Paul, what has happened? How is it that you have ended up in jail? Here's what's happened. The things that have come my way, and we'll talk about those things in a minute, have resulted in the furtherance of the gospel. And you need to make note of the word translated furtherance. The Greek word literally means a cutting before. This is the word that they use to describe the Army Corps of Engineers, the wood choppers. Back in those days, they didn't have the kind of infrastructure we have now. And so if an army was trying to get from this point to that point, and there was a forest in between, you had to send in the wood choppers to cut a path through the forest. to clear the way so that the army could get to where the fighting was going on. Like Daniel Boone, when he moved from Virginia over into Kentucky, he didn't take any interstate, he didn't take any two-lane U.S. highway. He got out in front of his wagon, and with his axe and with his machete, he cut a path just wide enough for his wagon to pull through to get from the east side of the Appalachians to the west side of the Appalachians. And because of what he did, people came in after him. They pulled out a few stumps he'd left behind. They widened the road a little bit. And men kept that up until there are now four-lane interstate highways going into Kentucky. The furtherance of the gospel, far from being hindered, far from being slowed down, far from thinking he's now at a stop, a red light, because I've been thrown in jail, Paul says, for the things that have happened to me have fallen out rather to the furtherance of the gospel. And that changed his entire outlook. That affected all of his emotions. He's not depressed. He's not gloomy. He's not downcast. He is joyful and he is optimistic. He says, I want you to know. And he doesn't say, I want you to know I'm innocent. He doesn't say, I want you to know the charges are bogus. He doesn't say, I want you to know we're going to appeal this case. He says, I want you to know that what's happened to me has furthered the spread of the gospel. And so full speed ahead. Paul says we're not slowing down. Now when we get to where we can look at life that way, when we get to where we can look at whatever comes our way as being not an obstacle but an opportunity to further the glory of God and the cause of Christ, that should change the way we think about things. And so I want us to look at the three circumstances. A fellow one time was asked, well, how are you doing? He said, well, I guess I'm doing okay considering the circumstances. And the fellow talked to him and said, the circumstances, what do they have to do with anything? And that's right. What are the circumstances? Every one of us here has a set of circumstances. Now, are we going to let them stop us, view them as an obstacle to stop us, or see them as opportunities and stepping stones to growing in Christ and to furthering the cause of Christ? Well, let's talk about the three circumstances that confronted Paul. I read them. They start there in verse 13. The first circumstance he was facing, he calls chains. That my chains that are in Christ. Paul was chained up. I don't know if he had leg chains or handcuffs or exactly what, but he's sitting there in prison in chains. Now, most of us would think, that's bad, Paul. They not only have you in jail, they have you in chains. Paul says, no, that's not bad. That's good. Paul would not have been in jail, he would not have been in chains, except for the fact he was a Christian. And now he's locked up. How is it that being locked up and chained can further the gospel of Jesus Christ? Well, let me remind you some things that are going on here. First off, back in Acts 28:16, when Paul arrived in Rome, he is put into a private house, sort of under house arrest, but he is there with a guard. He's not by himself, he is with a guard. Acts 28, verse 16. And often what happened is that the prisoner and the guard would be chained up together. Now the chain might be very long, so that one can sit on the couch and one can sit on the chair. But often what happened is that the prisoner and the guard would be chained together, and if the prisoner got away, the guard would forfeit his life. And so Paul is chained to this guard. And can you imagine the kind of conversations that went on between Paul and his guards? I bet they got an earful. I bet when one guard showed up to replace another guard, The guard who's been chained to Paul for the past 4 hours said something like, "Man, am I glad to see you. This guy's trying to make a Christian out of me. He's your problem now. I'm going home." And so every few hours they would chain the guards who were there with Paul, and that would give Paul an entirely new audience. I guess you call that a chain reaction, where Paul has one new prospect after another to teach the gospel to. And apparently it was because of Paul being chained to guards in Rome that Paul would later write to the Romans that the gospel has gotten into Caesar's household. That the gospel has gotten into the Praetorian Guard. The Praetorian Guard was the group that really ran Rome, that controlled who the Caesar was. Every government has got a Praetorian Guard who's the power behind the throne. And Paul says the gospel has gotten into the Praetorian Guard. A couple of centuries after the first century, remember the name of Tertullian, wrote, and here's what he said. He said, "There are now Christians everywhere. There are Christians in the cities, Christians in the villages, Christians in the markets, in the camps, the army camps, Christians in the town councils, Christians in the Senate, Christians in the forum." And I've got to think that all stems back somehow or other to the fact that Paul was chained up there in the city of Rome. Now in verse 14, Paul says, here's another thing that happened as a result of my chains. Christians are emboldened to speak. When Christians, verse 14, have seen how the gospel's gotten to the palace guard, the Praetorian Guard, they have become bold to speak the gospel. There were Christians looking at Paul's situation, and they were reasoning, if Paul can do all of this in jail, what can I do as a free man? What can I do out of jail? And they were taking encouragement from Paul's example. And they were preaching the gospel. They may not have known an adverb from an adenoid in regard to public speaking, but they knew him in whom they had believed. And they were more bold to tell people, "I believe in Jesus Christ." I tell you what, in the secular world that we live in, that this country has become, there is no way under God's heaven you can call America a Christian nation. No way. But that's why we are more important now as the children of God than ever. Because we're the very ones God's wanting to use to reach the unchristian nation we live in. And we have opportunities everywhere to stand up and to speak about the one in whom we believe. I'll tell you another thing that happened while Paul was chained up. The books of Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and Philemon were written. Over 1/7 of the New Testament books were written while Paul was there in jail. Maybe we need to lock up all the preachers. If brethren will be more bold to speak, if that will give us a chance to get the gospel where the gospel's not gone before. I mean, the Roman Senate was not coming to Paul's gospel meetings he was holding. They weren't coming to his Bible studies, so Paul had to get it to them. And he got it to them. That's what Paul did with the circumstance we call chains. And then Paul talks about a second circumstance of people who were critics. He talks about the fact there were people motivated by envy and strife, by jealousy and a sense of competition, who were preaching the gospel. I'm working on a book right now. I've been working on it for some time. Proofreading the book, about the history of surgery at the University of Pennsylvania. University of Pennsylvania was the first hospital in America. It came out of the Revolutionary War. And this book talks about the growth of it. It came one of the premier hospitals in America. Right there with Johns Hopkins. It's older than Johns Hopkins. And about how physicians from Pennsylvania went to Mayo Clinic, founded Mayo Clinic, went to all these other great institutions. I've been working on this book, and the thing that's amazed me is the amount of rivalry, the amount of backstabbing, the amount of jealousy, the amount of bad-mouthing, the amount of politicking that has gone on from the start between the doctors and the administrators at that facility. And that's the way it is everywhere. That's even the way it is in the church. You want to see a group where there's strife and envy and jealousy and all. Get a bunch of preachers together. Long ago, I stopped going to preachers' luncheons. In times past, I've been in areas where there have been a bunch of preachers not too far from each other, and they would often get together once a month somewhere for lunch at a restaurant. I went to a few of those and I thought, I've got better things to do than to sit around and listen to preachers gossip. So I quit going, and I rarely go anymore. And if I do go, if I'm on a meeting and someone says, we'd like to get preachers together for breakfast, I make sure that we talk about baseball and talk about, have you seen any good movies lately? Have you read any good things like that? And I won't tolerate being where there's gossip going on. But that's what Paul says is going on. There are men preaching the gospel, some for the right reason, some for the wrong reason, some out of envy and strife. They're trying to get me. And what does Paul say about that? He says, I rejoice that the gospel is preached. I'm going to come back to that in a minute, but hang on to that for right now. Paul says, I rejoice. What then? Whether for the wrong reason, verse 18, for the right reason, if Christ is preached, in that I rejoice and I will rejoice. And then the third circumstance, verse 20. All kinds of crises that Paul makes a general reference there. That whether in life or death, whether he's going to live or whether he's going to die, whatever comes his way, Paul says, I want to live in such a way that Christ is magnified. Now, you know what a magnifying glass is. You know what binoculars are. Binoculars have two ends to them. When you look through the wrong end, things that are big look small. When you look through the right end, things that are small look bigger. Paul says, I want people, when they come in contact with me and they look at me, can you imagine being the guard chained to Paul? And he's allowed to receive visitors there in the hired house where they've got him locked up. Can you imagine being a guard, seeing Christians come in and they embrace Paul and they hug him and they kiss him and they sit and they talk to him and they listen to what he has to say and they get up to leave and Paul says, now before you go, can we have a prayer? And so they all kneel and have a prayer. Can you imagine how a constant day after day example of that might affect a guard? You think Christ got bigger or smaller in the minds of those guards as they watch Paul? So Paul says, whether I'm chained up, whether there are critics, whether there's one crisis after another, I want people to leave having been around me thinking more of Christ than they did before they came to where I am. Now, there are two things I want to say about what Paul has said. Two principles I'd like to pull out of this paragraph. The first is that Paul trusted in God's providence. Look right there in verse 17, where Paul says, I am appointed. Now, some versions put this in verse 16, and some versions, instead of saying appointed, say, I am put here. Paul viewed his imprisonment as an assignment, as an appointment. Paul, why are you in prison? That I might defend the gospel. I've been put here for the defense of the gospel. And the word defense there does not mean to be on the offensive so much as it means to argue that what you believe in and stand for, that your worldview, your religion, is right. That's what this word originally meant. You're arguing for yourself because you're in the right. Paul says, to this I've been appointed. Paul believed his life was under God's control. He wasn't put in jail due to circumstances. He was put in jail because that's where God wanted him. Like we talked in class this morning, I think that's where all of us have to get, to where we believe whatever marriage we're in, whatever place we're at, whatever job we do, whatever kids we're given, it's because that's what God wanted for us. And we believe in His providence. You know, Joseph is sold into slavery. He can't figure out where his dad is, why dad hasn't shown up. Seems like his whole family's forgotten him. And years later, when he finally is reunited with his brothers, Joseph says, "Now you guys meant this for evil, but you know what? I now understand how God meant it all for good." Joseph got to where he saw the hand of God into the terrible situation that he had been put in, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. "If you don't bow down to my idol, I'm going to throw you into this furnace." And they said, "Go ahead. We don't know what God's going to do. But our trust is in God. And we're not going to bow down." Paul thought he was right where God wanted him to be. So Philippians, don't cry for me, Argentina. You know, I'm right where God has put me. Now, the second thing I want to say is, not only did Paul trust in God's providence, Paul was realistic about man's motives. He was not wearing rose-colored glasses. He saw everything as it actually was. He saw that there were men who were motivated by impure motives, by envy, which is a desire for position, and by strife, which is a desire for influence. And Paul didn't get sidetracked by that. I've known preachers, maybe I was like this a little bit myself 50 years ago. If I came across someone who I thought wasn't doing something for the right reason, man, I'd pull out all the stops to straighten them out. They've got to get their head straight. They've got to get their mind straight, their thinking right. And I wasted a lot of time trying to reform motives instead of preaching the gospel. But I don't see Paul getting caught up in that, do you? Now, he recognized reality. Some preach out of envy and strife. Some preach because they're trying to make things worse for me. I don't know how they thought that would happen. But Paul understood some preaching was going on because men wanted to make Paul's situation worse. Let me try to illustrate it this way. You're walking through a park, and there is a lady up preaching. Now, I don't believe that's the job of a woman to be a preacher. I believe women have more important jobs than being a gospel preacher, than doing what I'm doing right now. You women have got far more important jobs than what I'm doing right now. Far more influential work than what I'm doing. Don't ever forget that. But you're walking through a park and there's a lady up preaching, and you stop and you listen, and you don't hear anything that you disagree with. I mean, everything she says is exactly what you would say if you were up in her place doing the talking. So how are you to react to that? Are you to stop it? Call a halt? Listen, you shouldn't be up there. You're stepping outside your bounds of authority. You shouldn't be preaching. Is that what you're going to do? Are you going to walk away grumbling, complaining, upset, angry at the audacity of that? Who does she think she is? Or are you going to walk away rejoicing because Christ is preached? Paul left those situations rejoicing because Christ is preached, and he says, if it happens again, I'm still going to rejoice, regardless of the motivation that's behind these men. Regardless of the motivation that would make a woman get up to preach. Maybe the woman got preached because there's no man around who would do it. I remember back in the 40s, back in the 80s, 40 years ago. Back in the 80s is what I remember. Phyllis Schlafly. Anybody remember that name? Phyllis Schlafly? She was the one leading the charge in America against the Equal Rights Amendment. And there was nothing equal about the Equal Rights Amendment. It was a devastating piece of legislation had it passed for women. And she was the one who had the courage to stand up and oppose it, often on biblical grounds. And I remember thinking back then, where are the men who ought to be standing up and speaking as clearly and boldly and courageously as she? I bet if there were men doing what she was doing, no one would have been happier than she to have stepped out of the limelight. But Paul says, if Christ is preached, I'm going to rejoice. And so what's the lessons that come from this? Well, circumstances should never stop us. Circumstances should be viewed as opportunities for moving ahead. And we need to guard our motives. And we need to guard our reaction to another's motives so that the preaching doesn't stop. That's what the devil is after. If he can stop the preaching, he's accomplished his purpose. And he can stop it not just by motivating us to act from impure motives, but by getting us to react in an unchristian way to another's impure motives. The things that have happened to me, Paul says, have fallen out to the furtherance of the gospel. May we all be able to say the same at the end of the day, that whatever has come today, that Christ in my life has been magnified.